John Fitch here. I'm joined by Zuby. Uh-oh. Failure.
What's up?
My, my background music is playing. Sorry about that. Fixed it. It's all right. It's always something. technically sound person out there.
That's okay.
We'll get some more guys on the stream here, and I'll make you bear with me, and I'm gonna sing a song.
Okay, cool. So we're live streaming, yeah?
We're live streaming right now, yeah.
Oh, okay. Do you want me to share it with my audience?
Yeah, go ahead. Oh, yeah, okay. Share with everybody you want to.
Okay, I didn't realize it was live for some reason.
Oh, yeah. I just do a live stream, so the guys who want to join in and ask questions, it's fun to have feedback from people, and then I'll put it up. Audio version, I'll put it up later on my Podbean and iTunes and all that stuff. So. All right. I know it sounds funny, but I just can't stand the pain. Girl, I'm leaving you tomorrow. Seems to me, girl, you know I've done all I can. You see, I begged, stole, and I borrowed. Yeah, that's why I'm easy. I'm easy like Sunday morning. That's why I'm easy. I'm easy like Sunday morning. Why in the world would anybody want to put the chains on me? I paid my dues just to make it. Everybody wants me to be what they want me to be. I'm not happy when I fake it. I'm easy like Sunday morning. That's why I'm easy like Sunday morning. I wanna be high, so high. I wanna be free to know the things I do alright. I wanna be free, oh, just me, oh, babe. That's why I'm easy. I'm easy like Sunday morning. That's why I'm easy like Sunday morning. Oh man, thanks for bearing with me through that. I'm actually getting better at that song. It's only a few chords, so not so bad. So, Zuby, welcome to John Fitch Knows Nothing. You are a rapper.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. How long have you been rapping?
I've been rapping for about 13 years.
13 years now?
Yeah, about 13 years in total.
Okay. That's a good chunk of time to get things in. It takes about 10 years to really get good at anything, don't you think?
Yeah, I'd say that. I'd say I got good at rapping in like a year, but
oh yeah.
Yeah, it takes a while to make some headway.
To master it.
Yeah, for real.
So like you came across my timeline. I heard of you because of you breaking records.
I think a few people heard about me through that.
Yeah. So yeah. I thought that was pretty great. So people who don't know, Zuby is the national record holder for the deadlift and the bench press, right?
Mm. Mm-hmm. 84 kg weight class.
Yes, but
women's division.
The women's division.
Women's division. Yeah.
So I thought that was great. You didn't. Yeah, you went in your normal clothes outfit. You just walked in like, "Yep, I'm a woman today." While I mm-hmm. eat. What made you want to do that?
Well, you know, for people who follow these things and are aware of what's been going on culturally over the last few years, we've reached this bizarre situation in the modern Western world, which I saw coming, and people thought that I was being alarmist when I said that I saw it coming. But we've essentially reached a stage where large swathes of the population, or at least a very vocal percentage of the population, believes that anybody who identifies as a man is a man, and anyone who identifies as a woman is a woman. And some of these same people also claim that there is no biological difference between a man and a woman, and certainly no certainly no difference when it comes to athletic performance or strength or speed or anything like that. So I just wanted to, you know, I thought I wanted to be woke too. So I wanted to be progressive, go along with this narrative, and take the title that was, I mean, it's been long overdue to me for a while because I've been able to break that record for a very long time. But it's only when the world got woke enough that they realized that they were being bigots by preventing me from doing it, by saying that I'm a man because I have a beard and a deep voice and large muscles and a penis. But I told them that I identified as a woman while I was lifting the weight. So as a result, I am the British women's deadlift record holder and bench press.
And it makes a really good point. And I covered in a different podcast, I talked about some of the issues going on in Canada right now, because they're so woke that some people are getting arrested. Prisoners are going to prison and they're identifying as females. So they're getting men are being put into the men's lockup. They're the females' prisons. And then they go on to commit, you know, sexual assaults and all kinds of other stuff.
Yeah, it's happened in the UK as well.
It's if I ever get in trouble, I'm a woman.
Of course.
There's no standard.
No, it's whatever you feel, and no one is allowed to question what you feel. So
yes, I feel like we're going divulging into an era where, like, you're not allowed to have standards. You know, you can't have a frame. You can't have a standard. Like, well, there should be a standard for what a male is or what a female is. You should be able to test it. You know.
You know. Yeah, but it's all about feelings, John. It's about feelings. If I tell you I feel like a woman in the moment, and I can be gender fluid, so I don't need to be consistent either. So,
but there are no genders.
Yeah, well, if there are no genders,
it's like multiple universes living on top of each other.
Hey, man, I just play by the rules. I don't make the rules. I just play by the rules. People get mad at the rules. I was like, you know, I'm just going to play by the rules. And lo and behold, by me doing that, I mean, it was great being a woman, because the amount of popularity I gained after I identified as a woman, I was like, man, I should have done this years ago. Here we are.
That's wild.
It is wild.
You recently made a trip to the U.S. Was that your first trip to the U.S.?
No, it was like my fifth or sixth, but it was my first time going to most of the cities that I went to, and it was my first time going there for career reasons.
Okay. Did you, you've spent a lot of time traveling through your life, haven't you?
Yeah, a fair bit. So I was born in the U.K., I grew up in the Middle East in Saudi Arabia, and my family background is originally from Nigeria. And then beyond that, I've traveled to 30 something different countries so far. So yeah, I've been around the world a good amount. I've seen a lot of things. I've been to a lot of places, experienced lots of different cultures and peoples and ways of doing things. So I like to think I have a pretty good global perspective on quite a lot of things, which gives me a different viewpoint and insight to what a lot of people out there have, I think.
Yeah, I think if people who don't kind of get out in the world, I noticed, you know, when I started wrestling in college, we traveled around a lot in the U.S. and just state to state differences that you start noticing. I started realizing that, you know, my little town bubble that I lived in was, you know, tiny speck. You know, you had TV and cable television, but it didn't quite give you the same feel as actually getting out to travel. And I think doing that kind of got me the travel bug. And that's one of the reasons why I pushed towards fighting, because it was a more viable way of getting around to see the world.
No, that's cool, man. I mean, dude, traveling is important. I mean, there's no real substitute for experience. It's one thing to hear about something or read a book or watch a video or talk to somebody. But if you really want to understand the world and sort of see how, you know, see what different things look like and see how different places, how people in different places live and what the culture is like, what the traditions are, you know, what the foods are, all that kind of stuff, it's best to just go to that place and really experience it. And it will just, I recommend traveling to everybody, you know, both within your own country and also outside of it, because it'll just give you a perspective that I don't really truly believe you can totally get without traveling.
I would put on top of that too, like I've taken short week-long trips before, 2 week trips, but I stayed a month in Thailand like 10 years ago. And that was just to completely live a different place, a different way for a month or more it's a completely different experience.
Yeah, certainly, man. And I'm sure you learned a lot from it.
Yeah, it was, because it was isolating too, you know, it was very humbling, like to be just kind of in the jungle kind of, and then driving into training and being surrounded. Like I had this recurring nightmare that I was riding my scooter to the gym because at the time, the road was kind of overgrown with the jungle, whatever. They haven't cleaned it out at that time. And I would dream that this tiger was chasing me from behind. I was just barely out running on my scooter, and I'd wake up just like in a pool of sweat. I don't know why I kept having that, that dream. I was drinking too many of those Red Bulls or something.
Yeah. There's probably some crazy interpretation for it, but I can't tell you what that is.
Man. So let's, look at, some of your links that you, shared with us. You, have your, Facebook here, right? You were on Rogan not that long ago. It was like, that was during your trip to the US, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. That was like my third or fourth day in the country. Cause I flew straight to LA, and, the first podcast I actually recorded was the Rubin Report. And then I did Rogan, I did a Ben Shapiro show, the Adam Carolla show, and a whole bunch of others. I did like 10 or 11 different podcasts when I was in LA. And then I went on to San Francisco, Austin, Dallas, Fort Worth, Atlanta, Nashville, DC, and New York. So overall, it was a phenomenal trip.
Yeah, that's a lot of good cities to hit.
Yeah, man.
You've also got a book out.
I do. Strong Advice, Zuby's Guide to Fitness for Everybody.
There we go. This is your website. There we go. Strong Advice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. No, the book's it's now sold over 1,000 copies totally independently, just through my website and gumroad.com. So yeah, man. I had no plans to write a book last year. But one of my friends, Jose, sort of pushed me to go ahead and do it. And so I put that out there. And its success has gone way beyond my initial expectations. It's helping awesome. A lot of people, getting a lot of positive reviews. I went ahead and did a couple runs of the paperbacks and recorded the audiobook while I was in Nashville as well. So I'm glad it's helping people.
Oh, nice. What inspired you to write the book?
Well, I figured that since I was the British women's deadlift champion,
you could help out more.
Exactly.
More women could achieve their goals.
Exactly. Exactly. I want to smash the glass ceiling. And you know, I want to help the men too.
Tear down the patriarchy.
Tear down. Yeah. Just tear it all down, build it all up. I don't know, man, but yeah, no, I've been going to the gym. I've been training for even longer than I've been rapping for, and I've been rapping for a long time. So the book was really long overdue. So I'm glad I put it out there. I'm very glad it's helping people, and it continues to sell well. And it's an evergreen book, so it's something I can kind of keep pushing for my entire lifetime, because the information in it isn't going to expire.
Yeah, picking up heavy things does a body good. So what's have you been following any of the outrage over these guys doing the 22 con, the men talking to, women?
Oh, Vague, a little bit.
Of the century.
yeah. I have seen some of it. That's when
it's kind of spilled over to a much larger audience than I ever intended.
Yeah, well, that's what happens these days, right? I mean, he should just say that he identifies as a woman and make himself immune to all criticism.
That's right. The day of the conference, everybody that speaks identifies as a woman.
Exactly.
The problem solved.
And then you just call everyone a transphobe who says anything about it.
Oh, that's genius.
Dude, it's a checkmate maneuver. That's why no one could that's why of all the millions of people who saw and all the hundreds, tens of thousands of people who commented on my viral deadlift tweet last year, I mean, it was a checkmate. Nobody could some people wanted to get angry or responded in an angry way or whatever, but they didn't have a leg to stand on without contradicting themselves. Because I insisted. I said, look, I identified as a woman. So you know, these are the rules you've made. You've been telling all of us for years that a woman is anybody who identifies as a woman. Mm-hmm. So if I identify as a woman, then why does this suddenly not apply to me anymore? Like that seems pretty bigoted to me.
Mm-hmm. Can't break your own rules.
No, be consistent. I'm a fan of consistency.
Yeah, very, very, very big fan of consistency. Very big fan of meritocracy also.
That too.
Yeah. Which thing, speaking of meritocracy, quality. Stephen King came under a lot of fire.
Oh boy.
Yeah, because he said that art should be based off of quality.
Bigot. Absolute yes, bigot.
What a racist bastard.
How dare he?
How dare he put something out there like that, that we should judge art on quality.
Well, him and J.K. Rowling, they're the proponents of this stuff, man. They're the people who keep propagating all these ideas. So, you know, if you keep sharpening that sword, you're eventually going to fall on it.
Man.
And so, yeah that's, I can't say I felt bad because it's like, well, this is, you know, you lay in the bed that you make. And so people have been saying, yo, like, some of these ideas are going too far. And they keep pushing them and pushing them, thinking that it's never going to come back to them. But, you know, you can never be woke enough. I call that whole game like a circular firing squad. It's like, look, everybody's going to get shot eventually. So you can try to be the last one standing, but they will come for you.
Yeah, it's a good, very good analogy. Circular firing squad. Sooner or later,
they're going to get you.
There's no way not to get got.
Nah, and the rules keep changing, right? So even if you're within the rules right now, by 2022, there's going to be something you said in 2020, which is no longer politically correct. And so,
do you feel like things are starting to push back a little bit, or do you think they're getting worse?
I think they've been pushing back since about 2016. I think Trump was part of the pushback. I think Brexit was part of the pushback. I think the recent UK massive conservative victory in the election was all of these things, as far as I'm concerned, have been large scale pushbacks. Not everybody connects the dots on these things, but a lot of people
it's a very small group of people really, but they're just super loud and, and they have, you know, ties to the big money.
Mm-hmm. And they're all on Twitter and they're all verified. Well, not all, but lots. So
yes, lots of them are verified.
Yeah, people think that little microcosm represents the entire world, and it really does not.
Yeah, like even, you know, I live in the Bay Area, so that's kind of like the hub of Twitterverse. These people actually live here. And even here, like your day-to-day person that you run into is not on those terms at all.
Yeah.
So it's just it's really wild. It's really wild to me because like I'm surprised because I'm like, oh man, this is like, you know, Bay Area, it's the hotbed. So like when I hear like somebody say something that is just centrist. It's a centrist point of view. It sounds like I'm back in Indiana and I'm talking to like some rednecks.
Yeah, man. Well, yeah, no, I went to San Francisco and it's the only place I've ever gotten in a political argument with an Uber driver, would you believe? But that was fun. Cause that was a funny story. That was a funny story. Cause he was like, where are you from? And I was like, I'm from the UK. And he was like, well, I have to apologize. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, the president. He's like, you know, he's like, you know, every time I meet someone who's not from the US, I feel I have to apologize on behalf of Americans, especially if it's a person of color. And I was like, I can't remember what I said. I said something like, I think Trump's doing a pretty good job. And this guy exploded.
He stands on the bridge.
He was so not ready. He was so sure. He was so sure I was going to join in the Orange Man Bad. And
NPC.
So man. Yeah, the rest of the journey was, a huge argument over whether or not Trump is an evil white supremacist, racist bigot. And I found myself having to come to his defense, largely because he was one of those guys who just believed like all of the lies. So, you know, there are loads of valid criticism.
People get in bubbles and you know, they look for, you know, value from other people. They try to get, you know, their own sense of value from others. So they want to join into the group and they want to go along with, you know, everybody's hating on somebody or something. Mm. They want to join in. They want to feel
I just think it. Like, the thing with me is, again, I'm a very principled person. And one of my top principles is like truth and honesty. Mm. So it's like, look, there are a lot of valid criticisms someone can make of Donald Trump or any world leader, to be honest with you, right? Like the guy has flaws. He said bad things or whatever, but a lot of the times but in this case, a lot of times people jump to things that are not true. So it's the same. Look, it's like, there was that Democratic debate the other day, where there was that clash between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, right? And the media was just being very biased, very deceptive, you know, just being very dishonest. And I'm like, look, if I were American, firstly, I'm not, I don't have a dog in the fight, but if I were American, I wouldn't vote for either of these two people. But just as a matter of principle, I'm like, yo, you can't treat people like that, right? You can't paint Bernie Sanders as like some lying sexist. When he didn't say that. He said, I didn't say it. And then they're just like, oh, well, how did you feel when he said it? I'm like, come on, man. That's not fair. You know what I mean? It's like, just play fair. That's all I'm saying. Let them win or lose on their policies. Don't let them win or lose because you're being biased and you're twisting their words or literally making up things that they're saying, I didn't say this. And they're just like, no, you said it. And it's like, no, but I didn't. It's like gaslighting, man. That's not cool.
Yeah. Well, I notice this too often with the, I don't know, maybe I'm just seeing it, but more on the left and people who are more left leaning, but they often attack the messenger a lot more and harder.
Oh gosh.
You know, they're attacking the person rather than what his idea is. And that really, I have a real problem with that because I don't care. A person could be a total sleazeball, but he's got great economic policies. And, you know, he's going to do the things that I want him to do. Like I can separate some of the person's behaviors to how they're going to do it at a job.
That's because you're not totally ruled by your emotions. From what I can gather.
Yeah. I mean, I have no problem, you know, putting somebody in charge who I wouldn't hang out with personally, probably, if he did a great job.
Dude, I'm fine, man. If I'm in a plane and, you know, the pilot is an a-hole, I don't mind as long as they're a good pilot, like I don't want them to crash the plane. If I'm getting a, you know, surgery, I don't care about, you know, I don't care about the surgeon's views or attitude. I'm like, look, just get the job done.
Life-saving surgery, but this, yeah. I can't. He voted for Trump. I can't let him transplant my liver.
Yeah, or maybe deny him because, you know, he's the wrong skin color or the wrong gender or something. That would be even sillier.
Oh, man. It's getting wild out there. I had an epiphany moment with the Uber driver once. He was going off the whole drive about how his dad was this greedy businessman and didn't care about anybody but making money. And I was like, oh, your dad had a business in the Bay Area. He had a couple. I was like, oh, so do you have employees? He's like, yeah, he had employees. He's like, a lot. He's like, probably like 20, 30 each company. And I was like, oh, wow. So I was like, he had provided, you know, like 40 jobs. he provided 40 jobs to people, and they could, you know, make enough money to have healthcare and raise a family. That sounds pretty amazing. That sounds like a hell of a guy, honestly. And like the guy just got quiet, and like I could tell he was processing. He never thought about that ever in his entire life. Like his guy didn't spend time with him. He was always working. He didn't care about anybody but making money. It's like, dude, like he was feeding people. He kept people alive. Your dad's businesses, you know, kept people alive and fed money into the economy. So there's more tax money. So now, like, you know, the roads halfway decent. It's not great, but and he could just 10 minutes of him just like, you could tell the hamster wheel was.
Well, it's the thing is, you know, a lot of people, this is the thing, right? When people get isolated into echo chambers, and it doesn't matter what this is on, this could be on a social issue, a religious issue, a cultural issue, political, whatever it is, right? They never get their views challenged or questioned in any way, to the point that they haven't even thought about the flip side of anything, right? Like they haven't even thought about it. So I would certainly like to believe, and I do think this is true, like anything that I hold a strong viewpoint on, I can argue the other side better than most people can. Even better than, right? Like there are so many arguments I've been in where I'm like, look, I could make the argument you're trying to make way better than you actually
get. I do that. Right?
You know,
I debate myself. Like I'll get stuck in the shower, like arguing both sides. And stuff. I get stuck there, but like I get yelled at by people because I'm cutting them off because they're trying to have a debate with me, and I already know what they're gonna say because I've already processed it. So I finish like their sentences, and they're like, "You're not listening." But I'm like, I know exactly what you're saying. I'm following. I am listening because I've had these thoughts.
Yeah.
Like, and I've come to the conclusion that you're wrong.
Yeah. Or you know, like there are some things where, you know, some things are gray areas, but you can at least understand both sides. Yeah, just and that just comes with, you know, a level of humility. I think, I'll be honest, I think that's one thing that's kind of missing in society is, you know, humility. I think there are a few things missing. I think perspective and gratitude are missing, but I think also humility, right? The willingness to listen to another person, especially if it's someone who you don't agree with. Because, you know, I have a saying, you know, if I'm having a conversation with someone and we both know everything the other person knows and we don't disagree with on anything, then, you know, one of us doesn't need to be there, right? Every conversation should be a chance to learn something in some way, shape, or form. And so actually when you're confronted by someone who you really disagree with on one or multiple issues, it takes humility and you need to detach your emotions, but that's a chance to learn, right? Even if you think that person is totally wrong, it's interesting to, you know, work out their epistemology, see the line of logic that they are going through. And oftentimes it might just be
conclusion.
Yeah. And oftentimes it might just be like, oh, okay, that is the point where we disconnect, you know, because maybe they have a certain premise that they believe. And I'm just like, okay, well, I don't believe that premise. If I did believe it, then the rest of what you're saying makes sense. But here's why I don't agree with this premise that you're making to begin with. So, let's have an example. I'm sure you've come across the definition of racism that means that white people cannot be racist.
Yes, because there's a power issue there.
Exactly. So I disagree with the premise. I disagree with the definition that they're using to begin with. So if someone says racism is privilege plus institutional power, then I'm immediately like, no, that's not, I don't accept that definition. Because if I accept that definition, then one could make the argument that your conclusion you've reached at the end point makes sense. But the reason this argument is happening in the first place is because we're not even agreeing on the premise here. I'm going by open up a dictionary and look at what it says, right? If it says, racially based prejudice or the belief that one race or ethnicity is superior to another. So like, I'm going by that definition. That definition is saying nothing about power. It's saying nothing about privilege. It's saying nothing about black, white, anything. This is something that can run in any direction. So I reject the idea that only one group of people can be racist, because that is factually just wrong. But if someone were to accept that initial premise without question, then they could probably be convinced to go, okay, yeah, maybe black people can't be racist. And it's like, no, that doesn't make sense there.
Yeah. And man, it's such a weird thing. Where do you think that this, like, this mindset or this divisiveness kind of started happening? Because I felt like I was like a teenager in the 90s and things were pretty good.
Yeah,
like,
man.
I didn't really experience like people being racist towards anybody else. Like, we all had different friends from all different cultures.
Yep.
Indian, Mexican, black, like everything. And we were all just cool. Everything was cool. And then was it somewhere in the 2000s? Because I don't know if I really saw it until 2010s, like when the woke culture started, kind of sometime after the Edward Snowden revelations. I think there was some of the police shootings somewhere around then, like some things started popping off.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of these ideas come from academia. So that whole definition of racism being power, you know, institutional power plus, what do they say? Power plus prejudice. That definition comes from a social scientist. So does the idea of white privilege. That comes from a woman named Peggy McIntosh, who coined the idea in a paper in, I believe, 1989. Before that, the term white privilege had never, even no one had ever heard of it. And so lots of these ideas.
That was a really rich lady, right?
I don't really know her background. Okay. Yeah. And then you had Kimberly Crenshaw, who brought in the ideas of intersectionality. So this whole idea of, you know, a black lesbian woman having a totally different experience to a straight white male, and this, all of that stuff, right? Critical race theory, third wave feminism, a lot of these postmodernism, lots of these ideas really stemmed from academia. So some of them have been around since the 60s and the 70s, but the average person certainly hadn't heard of them, and they were not influencing policies or laws, or they weren't remotely mainstream. These were just fringe ideas held by some, you know, far left academics, basically. And I think that one of the big catalysts for it, if we're being honest, was social media, right? Because social media just allows ideas to really spread and take root in a way that, you know, the speed is just something we've never really seen before. And as we know, just the way human beings are, is once a certain percentage of people have and maybe are pushing some kind of idea, then a lot of people just kind of fall in line, right? People don't really ask questions. People aren't as critical as maybe they should be and be like, where has this?
Well, I think with kind of like religion fading, I think people are kind of looking for new religions.
Yeah, that too, man.
I have this theory that every decision we make is based on two primary drivers, and that's survival, to stay alive, you know, survival and reproduction. Mm-hmm. Like, everything we do is mostly driven by those two factors. It's like the motors that make us go. So a lot of that survival mentality is, you know, you're trying to make order out of chaos. So if you have a bunch of chaos, if your life is chaos, if we don't know why we're bald apes flying around a rock covered with water, filled with molten rock in an endless vacuum, like, that's kind of chaos. We don't know what the hell's going on. So if people don't have a religion to ground them, to make order out of that chaos, they start looking for other things. So then they fall into these traps, these fairy tales that sound good and kind of gives order to their life. Well, yeah, of course my life is hard and I'm not happy and things are bad. It's because of this.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I think people refer to that as the substitution hypothesis. So, and I mean, and I think there's some obvious truth to that, because if you think of the people who are really pushing these ideas hard and the people who get, you know, this sort of religious belief around certain ideas and become very dogmatic about it and whatever, it's it's hard to find religious people who believe in a lot of these ideas, right? Mm-hmm. It's not saying that that most or all atheists do believe in some of these, you know, silly ideas, but it seems like they're a lot more susceptible to it because there isn't that other thing that is grounding them already. So it's hard to find a devout Christian or a devout Muslim or a devout Jew who is, you know, an extreme climate change alarmist or like an extreme militant vegan or a militant SJW or like some super, you know, fourth wave feminist or something like that, because these things sort of take the place of a religion for a lot of people's lives. It gives them meaning, it gives them purpose, it gives them a community, it gives them ideas of sin and having an enemy, having something, having good and evil.
Gives you some
It does. It fills in all this stuff. I mean, some of them even have rituals, right? I mean, you see them, the chanting in the streets, the repetitive phrases, yeah. Right? Sometimes, you know, it's weird. Like I see certain things and I'm just like, dude, how are you not going to tell me this is religious? This looks like this looks like the most fundamentalist. Yeah.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah. Human beings are interesting.
So what's the path towards the future? What is it that people need to do more? What are regular people like you and me need to do? Or do we just need to worry about ourselves because the rest of the world's just going to burn?
Man, you know, I try not to get black-pilled, as people call it. You know, I'm a very optimistic person by nature.
Are you a bloomer? A bloomer, I think, is the term.
A bloomer?
A bloomer. You have bloomers, doomers, boomers, and doomer.
Okay. I'll go with bloomer. I don't mind. I'm not sure I know exactly what it means, but it sounds okay.
Well, it means that you understand everything that's going on. You see all the troubles around you, but you're still very positive towards the future.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a bloomer then. I call myself a realistic optimist. So yeah, so I can see some of the nonsense and I can see some of the dangers and the things I'm concerned about, but
there's always been chaos. Like, I mean, I studied history. History was my thing. I have a mm-hmm. minor in history from Purdue University and history education. And it's always been chaos. It's never been like, oh, peace, everybody happy, we're all hugging and holding hands. So like, this is just a continuation of what's going on. Things incrementally get better over time. This is like the greatest time to ever be alive in human history. Yep. We got this great technology. We can communicate to different people. I mean, we're thousands of miles away. We're getting a chat on a magic box.
Mm. and that's part of the problem. No, the comfort is part. You were asking what's causing all of this. The comfort is a big factor. They're not having these conversations in developing countries. I'll tell you that.
That's true.
There's nobody arguing over what bathrooms, you know, people should use or what pronouns someone is supposed to use. Like that's not happening.
They got to go out and find food for the day.
Yeah. I mean, I tweeted the other day, it went viral. I think it got like 20,000 likes or something. I tweeted, the less real problems the society has, the more genders there are.
Oh, that's really good.
It's true, right? Yeah, I mean, it's true.
You don't have invaders coming over the walls and into your tents to kill you at night. You don't have wild animals hunting you and trying to eat you. You're not worried about food shortages. Yeah, that's we're very lucky to be where we are. It's funny that we have the most comfortable time to be alive and everybody complains the most. Everybody's so unhappy.
Yeah, well, you know, I think I imagine there's probably something physiological there. I do believe that human beings need not just a sort of a mental struggle, but also a physical struggle, right? You know, as an athlete, as a guy that trains, and someone who I imagine hangs out a lot of people who train, there's a certain grounding it gives you, right? Going in the gym and lifting weights or running or something like that. Yeah, man. I mean,
adversity.
Sorry, say that again.
You force yourself to face adversity. Some people have never been put into a corner and had to fight their way out before.
Yeah.
I think that's why, you know, I'm a big, you know, wrestling. I wrestled in college. I think wrestling is the best sport anybody could ever do, is because it's mentally the toughest, because you're being put in an adverse situation repetitively over the course of that practice. Like, you're getting your face shoved in the mat. Yeah. People pulling down on your head, people slamming you, people twisting arms and stuff. You have to suck it up and be resilient. Otherwise you're just not going to make it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think human beings have some, this is conjecture here. I haven't read no scientific studies on this, but I think people have like a natural level of almost like anxiety, kind of like anxious energy, which needs to go out somewhere. So if you go to the gym and, you know, you slam weights or you run or you get rid of it physically somehow, then your stress and anxiety levels drop down. But I think what's happening with a lot of people, especially as people are very sedentary, they're not active, they're not exercising, they're sitting around looking at screens, is they still have that same anxiety. Those same chemicals are still firing around their brains and their bodies, but there's no lion around the corner. There's no tiger. There's no labor. There's no heavy lifting to do. There's no sweating it out. So instead, what happens is like the most minor thing triggers them, right? Mm-hmm. So, that triggers me. That I'm outraged. I'm triggered. I'm angry. It's like all that pent up frustration and anger and everything's there. It's still there. And it causes people to catastrophize as well. So something might just be like a very minor issue, but they build it up in their head to go crazy. I mean, you see this online all the time, right?
I think part of the problem too is people don't grow up anymore. There's no ceremony. There's no, what do you call it?
Rite of passage.
Rite of passage. Exactly. Mm. There's no rite of passages anymore. They used to have them, especially for young men. Like, you were 13 or whatever, you had to go out and kill something. You had to go and hold a thing of ants that stung your hand. Kind of crazy shit. And it's like, oh, you did it. And all the men treated you like, you're a man now. Yeah. So like, you had to take on the responsibilities of a man. But now it's like you have 35-year-old children.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah.
And you've also got that thing of, you know, the way people were raised. I mean, that's part of why playing sports, especially in childhood, is important, because you learn to win, you learn to lose, you learn the connection between hard work and results. You learn that sometimes even if you work hard, you don't get the result you want. It teaches you a lot of stuff implicitly. It teaches you how to cooperate. It teaches you how to compete, but compete in like a healthy way. Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
it teaches you how to lose.
It teaches you how to lose, dude. I mean, there are a lot of people. I mean, I feel like online and in the real world, I can almost sense when someone did not compete in sport when they were younger. You know what I mean? Like, there's some people I'm just like, you didn't do sports, did you?
You've never done a sport.
No, you've never done sports because you don't know how to lose. You don't know how to handle your emotions. You don't understand that hard work results in success and progress, because you just want to take stuff from other people and you just want to complain about other people and you externalize everything. And people don't want to just be, you know, take that personal responsibility and be like, okay, you know what? Most of my problems are my problems and I'm responsible for them. It's not the government. It's not the white man. It's not the patriarchy. It's not capitalism. It's not some evil force that's just floating around there in the ether. It's like, nah, man, it's you. Go get it. Yeah.
Get it done. Put out the effort.
Yeah.
Zuby's got an Instagram also. You guys can check that out. Zuby Music.
Hey, I need to make a new post.
Yeah. Stuff.
too many platforms to manage.
I know that's yeah.
It's, I miss MySpace.
You gotta, yeah, I know. As when you just had one thing. Now you have to go to like 19 different TikTok pops up. I'm like, Jesus.
It's too much. It's too much. Yeah.
I don't even know how to do the Snap thing. Snapchat.
It's too much, man. It's too much. And then as soon as you start mastering one, like another one comes and takes its place.
So like I'm a boomer, I guess. I'm old enough to like I lived in the stone ages of technology, right? So like I didn't really use a computer until my, you know, freshman, sophomore year at college, you know, like I didn't go to online forums. I didn't use American Online Messenger. Like I missed out on like all this stuff. So like, you know, I forget that Google, I can Google things. This technological gap between, you know, what is just normal for people. So I guess like the kids that grew up with the technology, they're the Zoomers, because they've always had social media, they've always had you know, FaceTime or whatever. So yeah, like trying to explain to my kids, like I got a couple sons, to explain that the phone used to be attached to the wall, right? And it was a big deal when you could get a cordless phone in your house. That was a big deal.
That was a big deal. I remember that.
We called it the Farmer Five when I was, you know, a toddler. We only had five television channels.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like, I had to explain that to him, because we went over to the grandparents one day and they had cable TV instead of like Netflix or a streaming service. And they were getting pissed because they couldn't pick the show that they wanted. And they had to say, what is this? What are these?
Like, oh gosh.
Come on. This is stupid. They were so mad.
That's so funny. How old are they?
They're going to be 8 and 6 next month.
That's funny.
Yeah, man.
That is funny.
So yeah, they see like old stuff in black and white movies. Like I show them Three Stooges and Laurel and Hardy stuff, and they think that, like, that's when I was a kid. Like, yeah. you used to watch these guys when you were growing up? I was like, yeah. He's like, oh wow, you didn't have color TV? And I was like, no. These guys were old and dead by the time I was a kid.
Yeah.
They think I was in the black and white.
It's crazy that when they grow up, I mean, all the stuff that we have now in 20 years time is going to look so outdated, right? Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Unless, it's going to be wild. Unless we implode and everything, we've already peaked as a civilization and is that a downtrend? That's a possibility.
It's unlikely, but possible.
In the road, I think right now, I think we idiocracy or, you know, something much better.
Yeah. Learn Mandarin.
Yeah, that's true. You're not lying.
Learn Mandarin.
China is a problem. China's a problem.
Dude.
Man.
China's coming for everybody.
China is
coming.
It's some Genghis Khan genes, I think.
Yeah, man. And there should be way more of them, too. That's the crazy thing. They hadn't artificially suppressed their own population so hard.
Exactly. That's nuts. No, that's what's going to be. Yeah. That's what I'm afraid of is China is definitely gonna be a problem, because they're polluting their land so bad. They're not going to be able to stay there forever. You've got a whole generation of young men who don't really have an opportunity to have wives or happy fathers. Like that's a problem. I see that as like just something just brewing and disaster waiting.
Yeah. It's possible, man. I don't know. But yeah, there's, yeah, I don't know. We will see. We will see. Hopefully it'll be, peaceful.
Yeah. Let's hope there's, something happens.
Just identify as Chinese if you need to.
That's true. The Chinese are based though. I don't play those games. They're not playing around.
They're not down with that.
Nope. I think the Chinese and the Muslims are pretty damn good at holding their frame. I mean, like, no, that's just, we're staying right here.
Yeah, that's one of the funny things, man, having lived in Saudi Arabia for 19 years, you know, because I get a lot of questions about what it was like and everything. And
yeah, I'm curious. That's what was your typical, you know, what age were you there?
1 to 20.
1 to 12. Oh, Jesus. Okay.
Yeah, I grew up there, man.
What's your life?
Yeah. So, I mean, I went to boarding school in the UK when I was 11, and I went to university in the UK. But during that whole period, I was still back and forth between the two countries. My family was still back in Saudi. So I just come here during term time for school. And then I go back.
I've heard you talk about it before a little bit. You were kind of in a neighborhood away from.
Yeah. Yeah. Like an expat community, what they call a camp or a compound. So, yeah, my dad's a doctor and he worked for, it's actually the biggest company in the world, biggest oil company in the world called Aramco. So, it actually, funnily enough, it went onto they had their IPO, I think last month, and got valued at $2 trillion. So yeah, most biggest company in the world. I think Apple is second. So, I lived in that community. So where I was very much like a bubble. It was, in terms of what it looked like, it looked kind of like an American suburb. It looked like some of the suburbs you'd see in California or something like that.
Maybe Arizona.
Maybe so. Yeah, maybe so. Or some parts of Texas reminded me of it.
Because like Arizona is just desert and like camps and places.
Yeah. But it was a cool place to grow up, man. I learned a lot there, and it taught me to understand and have an appreciation for and empathy for, you know, different cultures and just different ways of doing things. Because the way the whole society is set up there in terms of real Saudi is it's very different. You know, it's essentially a theocracy. There's no separation of church and state. It's not based around total freedom and liberty like somewhere like the US or even the UK or West in general is. The people are very religious. They believe what they believe. There's not that much, people here would call a diversity in terms of different religions or viewpoints on certain things or whatever. But it comes with pros and cons. People always think I'm crazy when I say that there are any pros, and I'm just like, well, that's kind of making the point that of why people should travel, because if people think that the only way that things can be done is the American way or the British way or whatever, and there's no other way to run a society, and that everything we do here is the best way of doing everything, I'm like, no, it's not. Some of the things are great. So with me, in terms of the cultures I know, I almost like kind of cherry pick to get my own worldview and what I sort of think is the best way of doing things. I think that there's some things they do in Saudi that are better than the way they do them in the UK. I think that there are lots of things in the UK that are better than the way they do things in Saudi. Even between two countries like the UK and the USA, which are on paper somewhat similar, there's still some pretty large cultural differences that make it difficult for people to understand things from different ways. Like if you're in the UK and you're trying to explain the Second Amendment to somebody, they look at you like you're an alien, you know, like the average person does not understand it at all. And then if you go to certain parts of the US,
California, that look at
yeah. You. Yeah. But then if you go to
importance of the Second Amendment.
Yeah. But then if you go to Texas or Arizona or something, and then they think it's crazy that in the UK, not even the police have guns. And they're just like, what? That is the craziest thing. It's crazy you can't have a gun. And it's crazy that the police don't even have a gun. Like, how does that work? There's different factors.
I don't think it works that great. They had that guy who did the stabbing or whatever. They had to get him with a narwhal horn.
The narwhal tusk.
I couldn't believe that. I was like, I've apprehended him with a narwhal tusk and a fire extinguisher.
And you know, one of the guys that apprehended him was like a convicted murderer or something. Oh, did you see that?
I didn't see that at all. No.
Yeah. So he was like a hero on that day, but he himself had actually like killed somebody and was serving time in prison for a murder. But he was on like day release or something. I don't know why they give murderers day release, but the whole thing was just very bizarre.
Well, maybe he saved, he whatever, he redeemed himself a little bit, maybe.
Maybe so.
He felt like he should sacrifice himself to better good or something, maybe.
Maybe so, man. There's redemption for everybody. I believe that.
Yep. Let's see. People can check out your Twitter also.
Oh, please do. Yeah.
Your Twitter is fire. Is this your pin tweet or something? This is your record breaking deadlift.
That's my record breaking deadlift.
Oh, amazing.
I keep it pinned to keep people triggered.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, yeah. I still receive flack for that daily.
People are still mad that you played by their rules.
People are still mad.
How dare you play by our rules and make us look bad? You also have your YouTube channel.
Oh, yes. YouTube.com/ZubyMusic. For anybody listening, I'm Zuby Music on everything. Just Z-U-B-Y Music.
Music and everything. Music, yeah. And podcasts.
Mm-hmm. So I've got some of my music videos up there. I've got some of my latest podcasts there.
How long have you been doing the podcast?
I started this time last this. In fact, I started exactly this time last year. So I should do I should actually do a 1 year anniversary post.
Oh, this is my 50th show. This is my 50th John Fitch Knows Nothing.
Good man.
So that's pretty cool. I did a year of live streams though. I think it was called a shake break because I would do my protein shake. There's the time of day. So like, well, I got a few minutes to do it. So I started doing it and it just grew. And I was like, I might as well just do set into a podcast. Excuse me. And then I'm just going to format it. I was just talking to people and answering questions with people.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided to just do it more of a interview format. So thanks for coming on and helping out.
Yeah, you're very welcome, man. It's been fun.
So it's been about an hour. You got anything else you'd like to share?
I'm going to share again. Yeah, sure. My website is zubymusic.com. If you want to follow me on Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, or Facebook, it is at zubymusic, Z-U-B-Y Music. My latest album, Perseverance, is out right now on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, everywhere else. Just search for Zuby. And you can also find my podcast, Real Talk with Zuby, on all platforms.
Awesome, man. I really appreciate you coming on and talking to me.
I appreciate it, man.
I enjoy you on my timeline, that's for sure.
That's cool, man.
All right, man. I'll be seeing you later, okay?
Not somebody. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
All right, take it easy. All right, guys. That was pretty cool. Zuby's a great dude. Check him out. Look at him on YouTube. Check out his music. I want to play you guys out real quick. And it'll go. Start over. It was almost good. All right, guys, that was fun. I'll check you guys later.